Welcome to the Classy Ring Guitar Podcast. I'm Joel.
I'm Chris.
And it's time to get classy.
Let's do it.
So, we went to Raw last week.
We did.
And in the grand tradition of missing everything by a week, had we gone 1 week later...
Oh, sure, then we would have...
We would have gotten to see Seth Rollins.
Right.
Enzo would have been back.
Right.
Just, like, everything that I was like...
Well, that's the risk of going to a go-home show.
It was a go-home show. Right. And, like, and it's not like I would have not gone either way.
Right.
But it's just a bummer to watch it be like, I was hoping that would have happened last week.
Sure. Oh, yeah. I mean, can we just talk about, like, the massive pop that Seth got, like, the night after, like, even, like... But it wasn't a surprise anymore.
Yeah.
That, like, you know, it was a pretty big reaction whenever he came out Sunday night at
Extreme Rules.
Extreme Rules. I keep wanting to say Payback because they're essentially the same thing.
Yeah. And
we had been saying for a while now that when Seth came back...
He had to be.
Had to be a face because of the reaction we got. And you know what? Shame on us for underestimating the heel powers of Seth Rollins.
Yeah, like, he did a good job.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, it was impressive how he was able to turn from, like, a Shane reaction. Like, that was the type of, like, Shane McMahon surprise return reaction.
Yeah.
You know? Like, the people were going nuts for Seth.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where, like, I'm sure somebody backstage was probably, like, regretting. It's like... I kind of wish we hadn't planned on him turning, like, returning heel.
Yeah. It's weird, though, because Seth was getting the kind of reactions that they strive for in other wrestlers. This isn't even a Roman-specific thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is a, you know, when they have face wrestlers, like, they would kill for, like, you know, Neville to get this kind of reaction.
Right.
You know, but, and here they have it, naturally and organically, and there's a little bit that's just like, why would you throw that away? Like, why can't he just be another top face?
Right. And again, part of that has to be, it clearly has to be the stubbornness about Roman.
That's the only thing I can come to.
There's that.
I mean,
maybe they feel like he's such a valued quantity as a heel.
Mm-hmm.
Because of his talent as a heel.
I could go further into the how could you and why would you not. And add in, like, why would you not make Seth the face and Roman the heel? Since that's mm-hmm. where the natural sway of the audience
sure.
is pulling. But even with we're making Roman the face and the top face. And we're sticking with that.
Mm-hmm.
I still feel like that Seth reaction was so strong and so pure and genuine that you're like, oh, that's what we want.
Right.
That's what we chase at. That's the entire business chases after that reaction.
Right.
And there it is, and it's like thrown. Like, you know what? AJ could be a really good heel now.
Sure.
You go ahead and have him, you know, make the chair swing, and then he's a top heel. Kevin Owens needs one pinfall over Roman, and he's a top heel.
Right.
You know? It could probably even be a, you know, dusty finish pinfall, but
if he gets
the pin, he stands up. He doesn't have to win a title. You just have to... He's there in every way, but you acknowledging it.
Right.
So, while I get that you need that other top heel, and Seth's going to fill that role now...
Right.
It's not like he was your only choice.
No. And granted, like, just him being there and getting, you know, one boo reaction, he reestablishes himself as the company's top heel.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he was,
a mere 30 seconds before.
A mere 30 seconds before that, he was your company's top face as far as crowd reaction.
Yeah.
At that point.
Yeah.
I feel like part of that has to also be WWE or Vince underestimating the type of reaction he would get when he came back. You know?
Maybe.
It has to be, because whether explanation is there, you know?
I guess. I mean, and I don't know how much freedom Seth got on that little return. Because he seemed to be, you know, he got to jostle and be, yeah, I'm back, and I'm glad you missed me, I missed you.
Oh, sure, yeah.
For about, like, it was 15 seconds.
Right, there. It was a very good, like, kind of roping roping everyone in.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't need to reel everyone in really at all, because we were already on board with him.
We were ready to go.
Right. So he didn't need to hook us as much as, like, the Mark Henry retirement thing hooked us.
Right.
As the situation ran on.
But
it's, I don't know.
And he broke up the Shield. And, like, that is, he has that free thing that will always and forever get boos.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Like, if he mentions that in his Hall of Fame speech,
He'll get boos.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that is a nice thing for that character to have.
But it'd be like, I broke up the Shield by swinging a chair at Roman Reigns, you get cheers.
Yeah, that was a little like, booyah, and like, right. When he did it, he said, I hit Roman
and
Reigns.
And that's how he kind of started the turn in front of everybody on Monday, is he mentioned that, they got a kind of a mixed reaction, and then he went full tilt.
Mm. Well, and I think this is, you know, getting way into the nitty-gritty of it, but the way he phrased it was, I hit Roman Reigns with a chair and broke up the Shield.
Right.
So by mentioning the Roman Reigns thing first, it was like, you could hear this, like, this swell, here it comes! And then, it was like, oh, wait, oh, that's the chair shot he's talking about. We hate that chair shot.
Right, yeah. And, you know, and I don't want to belittle the skills of Seth Rollins, because it was just a great job of...
It was.
...of playing on everyone's emotions and turning it in that moment. Like, that's an impressive feat.
It's very well done. I mean, and clearly his job was, they cheered you last night, make them stop. And he went out and he did that job masterfully.
Yes.
And that's, you know, that is something to be commended.
Right.
So good job for him.
And it was a fantastic beginning. Now let's transition to something on Raw that is a big old question mark
for me. Okay.
Not a good question mark either. The state of
the women's championship.
Yes. That just seemed like the whole thing got away from everybody involved, like, from the get-go, and they're all, and Charlotte in particular was just grasping at anything she could to kind of rein it all in.
So, going to what I'm assuming was, like, the pitch for this segment was, mm-hmm. We need to break Charlotte away from Ric Flair.
Right.
That was the...
Now that she has Dana Brooke.
That's the goal of this segment. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether that's to put Ric Flair somewhere else, or Ric Flair needs to have some not-on-the-road time. I don't know exactly why. But well, this is the point of this segment, because Ric Flair's going to be gone for a while, and we need to say why.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had issues with, for all of the strides with the women's champion, you know, that's a women's champion now, that mm-hmm. she's the inaugural women's champion.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that she got it with the help of a guy.
Right.
The fact that she's retained it with the help of a guy. Has been not like a complete derailment, but a little bit of a sticking point.
Right.
So there is some, like, the fact that she's, you know, I am woman and I have this championship and I don't need you to defend this championship. This is my championship that I earned.
Right.
It is in theory really good. The fact that she's yelling at Ric Flair, though, and making Ric Flair cry, because Ric Flair's a legend, sure. Ric Flair's a Flair.
While also trying not to cry herself, because, you know,
yeah.
They're both very emotional people, and they don't exactly hide that very well in these types of situations.
And they're obviously plucking some real, you know, tender heartstrings there that...
Also, I'm sure, like, she hates that she's saying this to her father, but she's trying to play a role.
Mm-hmm.
But you can just see it all over her face that, you know, she doesn't really mean these things, and she hates that she's saying it.
Well, there's this, like, she hates that she's saying it. It's still not necessarily untrue in real life.
Sure.
Like,
yeah,
I'm sure there was the issues talked about did stem from, you know, a real thing.
I'm sure, yeah, absolutely. But I'm sure it's also things that have been resolved, like, a long time ago.
But I don't know. watching the segment, I don't know what we were supposed to cheer.
I felt like...
Or what we were supposed to boo, maybe.
Right. I felt like people were supposed to be pretty, you know, much booing the entire thing. When Charlotte, you know, began the separation between her and Rick. She let the crowd get to her pretty early on. And you see that, and it really got under her skin. And she, like, addressed it pretty much head on.
Mm-hmm.
And did so by yelling and scolding at the crowd, and that does nothing but make it worse.
Which is interesting, because literally a week ago, the Go Home show, she did a masterful job with the crowd.
Right. And
I mean, that was Ric Flair in the Greensboro Coliseum, and that was right. Like, and she needed booze, and she wasn't going to get booze, and she whipped that segment around and got the booze that she needed to get. Sure. It was incredible. This is the best I've ever seen Charlotte
and, you know,
handle a crowd.
Followed by the worst she's ever handled a crowd. And again, like, it's got to do with this huge ball of emotion that was accompanied with this particular segment. There was such, and it's something that, you know, for all of Charlotte's strengths, you know, these emotional promos or emotional segments that they seemed to love to
put on her,
put on Charlotte, she doesn't deal with it well.
Right.
Nor should she, because honestly, I hate these kind of things. You know, I'm not saying that I hate it. It's like, oh, I hate it that she's yelling at her father like this. I just hate these type of segments because they feel awkward and disingenuous, and no one seems to be really good at them.
It's breaking kayfabe in a weird way. Like, it feels like it's a weird time to do it.
You know what it feels like?
What?
I Wish You Died in the Womb.
It's not as bad as I Wish You Died in the
Womb.
But
it's that same channel, you know what I mean? Like, it's that same vibe. I'm not saying it surpassed that, but it's in that...
It's...
That aisle of the supermarket.
It's weird because we live in a world and a day and an age where we are all in agreement that we're watching a TV show.
Sure.
Nobody is, you know, head in the sand, this is a real thing.
Yeah.
So we're all... You know, we're sitting there, we're like, we're going to watch a TV show with fake characters doing fake stuff.
Right.
And, you know, we're watching this TV show. We know there's a script. We know all that. And so when these things happen, it feels like all at once WWE is trying to switch on that agreement. Be like, no, it's real again. And you're like, no, we agreed and we're okay with it. You don't have – it's honestly the best – example I can think of is CM Punk when he does the "This isn't CM Punk talking to Triple H, this is right. Phil Brooks talking." And it was a little bit like, and I get that was really kind of cool at the time, because of the pipe bomb and because we it still felt,
and pulling back the curtain was kind of his thing at that point,
right? And that's the thing. It was him, and that was what he was doing, and it still was kind of this new thing in the whole reality era,
right,
quote unquote. But now using real life things to like drive home feels like they're kind of going back on the agreement where we're all in agreement that this is a story being told
through
writers.
Honestly, it also felt out of place because it kind of came out of nowhere. You know,
and
just the week before, when they introduced the additional stipulation that Ric Flair was banned from ringside, you saw how upset Charlotte got.
Yeah.
And so now, all of a sudden this week, where after she won the championship, after Dana Brooke posed as Ric Flair, now suddenly she wants Ric Flair out of her life completely. Like, I felt like this should have been a gradual thing.
Yeah.
Like, this, probably a better tooled version of this, would have a much, it would make more sense, storyline-wise.
Mm-hmm.
But they wanted it to be surprising, they wanted it to be shocking, and I'm guessing in Vince's, or whoever wrote this's mind, they were thinking, this is high drama, this is like House of Cards, this is, you know, this is going to be something profound that's really going to tug at the heartstrings, and it was Jerry Springer.
Yeah.
You know? instead.
And, well, they might be really pleased with Jerry Springer.
Sure, they might be. They might be, and that might have been their plan for the entire time. Also, that would be a bad... That was awful.
But, I mean, a part of it was Dana Brooke, you know, 2 weeks ago had a very different storyline planned.
Sure.
And then Emma hurt herself, and right. So it's like, well, let's do this. And so...
Right, and so now they're like, well...
We took a very sharp left turn because Dana Brooke got introduced.
And now they apparently have to do something with Dana Brooke. I don't know why, but apparently that involves her teaming up with somebody because apparently, I'm guessing they just don't want her on her own or whatever.
I'm not totally sure what
because they, you know, I mean, sure, like, I understood her and Emma because they were teamed together in NXT, and I guess they enjoyed that dynamic, and so they wanted that on the main show, and now that Emma's hurt and on the shelf for a while, I guess they just don't want Dana Brooke by herself.
Maybe. I don't know.
And again,
where they're going with that exactly.
Why they want to put so much emphasis on Dana Brooke now, I don't know.
They like Dana Brooke. I know you're not wild about it.
I can think of probably one person that likes Dana Brooke, and that's probably Vince. Because she's a former bodybuilder.
She's fine. I mean, she's...
Her voice still gets under my skin.
She has the incredible misfortune of having to follow the Four Horsewomen.
Yeah.
Like, that just sucked. You can't...
Mm-hmm.
That's an impossible thing to try and do.
Right.
Those four women wrestling at the same time, you know, basically building this division up, you know, through sheer determination on their part.
Mm-hmm.
And then being just kind of the first thing to come in after that and having to be compared to that.
Sure.
I don't...
Because Emma, when she came back, she kind of flew under the radar. She was a last-minute addition to a pre-show match on WrestleMania, you know?
Right.
But now they were starting to treat her more... Emma had this weird thing
where it was like, you know, because Emma is a little bit associated with Emma and Paige, who, you know,
sure.
were like the prologue to the Four Horsewomen. And so...
Right. And then she came up to the main roster and didn't quite work out and got to sit down. And so, again, they like kind of slowly rolled her out and then... She started to rise to some prominence until, you know, the unfortunate injury. But whereas Dana Brooke, you know, came out of nowhere, literally.
I mean, and I think she has... I don't think she ever, you know, made it to that level in NXT, and I don't know who could. That's the thing. Sure. It's like, I don't know what she did wrong. I don't have anything that was like, she should have done this, because...
Right, and it's just... I don't. It felt like she blazed through NXT by comparison to a lot of people that have.
Well, Bayley's still there, you know.
Well, Bayley's still there. Alexa Bliss is still there. I mean, to a lesser extent, you've got Carmella, who's just now kind of starting to come into her own as far as an in-ring talent. But Eva Marie's still
there. I mean, like
the first three that I mentioned, I would. Definitely rank over
Dana Brooke.
I'm not just saying that because I'm a fan of those three women. But it's just, I don't know. And again, it could have just been hinging on Emma, and now they're kind of scrambling with the injury.
I think that might be part of it. I think
because honestly, like I will say, Dana Brooke is a good. She's a good heater. Like, she's a good person to kind of come out and do the talking and get heat for whoever she's teamed up with. And it worked pretty well with Emma in NXT, and they were wanting that to happen now.
Well, I mean, one of the, you know, best parts of this is they have this plan for a female wrestler. It can't happen because of things outside her control.
Sure.
And the first thought seems to now be, what else can we do with her rather than never mind, scrap the whole thing? Sure. Which I feel like 2 years ago, 3 years ago would have been,
except for never mind, let's scrap this whole thing that they had planned between them and Becky Lynch.
Yeah, I mean...
So now Becky Lynch is...
Back to
not being on the show with Sasha Banks.
Yeah. Anything else you want to touch on Raw real quick?
You know, they started the qualifying stuff for Money in the Bank.
Right.
So I thought, you know, that was...
is Sheamus's new gimmick going to be attacking anybody who mentions the new era?
Well,
because that might turn Sheamus face for me.
I don't know. And I feel like that might hinge on something we're going to talk about. Well, might as well go ahead and talk about it. News came out Tuesday.
Okay.
Today's Thursday. And again, this is because we're now going to start recording on later in the week. And the great thing about that is we don't miss out on a ton of news
that happens,
you know, later in the week. Because it seems to happen every single time. Like, the day after we record, stuff goes down. And that would have happened this time around.
Yes.
Had we recorded like normal. But WWE basically, through Variety, I think, is the one that they had break the story, excuse my English, that there's going to be a brand split again.
Well, the official information is that SmackDown is moving to Tuesdays on USA.
It's going
to
be live.
Which means SmackDown will be live from now on.
And it will have, I think they worded it, each show will have a distinctive roster.
Yes, they've said distinctive roster.
They purposely did not say brand split.
With different writers.
Yes.
So, for all intents and purposes, brand split.
Right. And from what I understand, the guy who was writing NXT...
is moving up to SmackDown.
Moving up to SmackDown. And the next NXT TakeOver, as of yesterday, is titled NXT TakeOver The End.
Yes.
Which is intriguing and concerning in a couple various ways. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on right now, and it's just like we've been taking in all this information and at the same time playing out all these possibilities in our heads that we just don't know. We don't know, you know, how to make heads or tails of it.
Right. So this is so much information, and there's so much like, this can mean this, or it can mean that. So trying to break down what we know for sure.
Yes.
There is going to be a draft night. There's going to be a draft episode of Raw.
According to several reports, I don't think anything official has been put out there, but according to reports, the July 11th edition of Raw will be the draft, and then the following SmackDown, I think it's like the 17th or something, I don't know. So I guess it gives them a week to kind of figure things out.
Yes.
And it's one of those things, like, that's coming up soon. Like, it's about a month away, but...
It is, but doesn't it, like...
It feels like that's happening pretty quickly for WWE.
Doesn't it kind of make every Raw between now and then, like, whatever. Unless they are talking about that,
unless they're gearing up towards it. And that's why I was talking about the Sheamus thing and how that's interesting, because... Maybe that's what causes, like, in the storyline, that's what causes the divide. Sheamus gets more and more people kind of, like, on his side, even, like, faces, which is, you know, going to be the surprising thing, or at least that's what they're going to go for people that are just like, nah, I'm not, you know, why are we so worried about these new era guys when we're all still here and we're all, you know, still capable of, you know.
They have mentioned specifically, like, they've introduced guys fresh from NXT as part of the new era.
Right.
Which is something that they haven't been doing before now.
Sure.
But does that mean that SmackDown just becomes Super NXT? And is that... I mean, I don't know if better is the right word, because we've pretty much all confirmed that NXT has been better than Raw for a good long while now.
Sure.
But... Okay, so...
But at the same time...
When the brand split existed previously, and not at the beginning of the brand split, towards the end of the brand split.
Right.
A lot of people were calling for the end of the brand split. I was among them.
Right.
I was pretty vocally against the brand split.
Because it came across as such a little effort was being put forward into SmackDown.
Right. There was such a clear A and B... show.
Right.
And there will always be an A and B show. Like, that's just how it will be. That sucks. I wish it wasn't, but WWE will always put a little more effort into Raw.
Right.
At least Vince will.
Maybe. Especially since so much of SmackDown was spent recapping what happened the previous Monday.
Right.
And that's the big thing. That's going to be the major.
Now, a lot of the things that were my complaints at the time were things like, as long as Raw is live and SmackDown isn't,
right.
Raw will always be the issue. And that's being taken care of.
Right.
And so, but looking at it, and the way they solved it initially was they had the Raw Super Show,
right.
Which was Raw and SmackDown will always be on Raw, and then SmackDown would just be the SmackDown roster.
Right.
And then the SmackDown roster kind of fizzled into like, whoever's on SmackDown this time, I don't know, whatever.
Sure.
Because then there was no official SmackDown roster anymore. It was just definitely not the main guys.
Right.
So now that the brand split is coming back to make it work, to make this happen the right way,
mm-hmm.
some things need to be addressed.
Yes.
And one is, what the brand split I feel should be is we are pretending that these are two different competing companies.
Sure.
We all know that they're under the WWE umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
But that, which is better, Raw versus SmackDown, should exist and should feel like WWE versus WCW.
Right.
Like, and
that they're not directly competing against each other in a physical match situation, but competing against each other in as far as like ratings and getting your attention.
There should be a pull of, if you can only watch one, which one are you gonna watch?
Right.
I
mean, they want you to watch both, but that's...
Well, and that's the thing, is both of them need to be theoretically must-see. And I don't think anybody, even in WWE, could honestly say that SmackDown was as must-see as Raw for the past 5 years.
Right.
It just wasn't, they were not even trying.
Mm-hmm.
It was such a B show. It was, you know, superstars and main event that they happened to have network airtime for.
Sure, yeah.
So going live is a big, big deal. That's probably the biggest deal of
yes.
the whole thing.
That's the biggest signal that they're taking this seriously.
Well, because part of the issue is nothing happened on SmackDown because it would be spoiled by the time it aired.
Sure.
And I understand that, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I understand why you would not want to do that. The last exciting thing, mm-hmm. like, oh boy, I got to watch SmackDown because this is going to happen. Like, Wade Barrett won the IC title,
right.
And when there were two Sin Caras, they debuted for the first time on SmackDown.
Right.
And so, thinking back to, like, how long ago that was, and both of those times, I knew to watch because it had already been spoiled for me.
Right.
So I can totally see why you don't make any really big deals happen on SmackDown,
mm-hmm.
because it's going to get spoiled. I think they need to keep the WWE title the main,
yes.
you know, brand crossing title.
Yeah.
They don't need to try and make two belts because
we've got enough as it is.
Well, WWE title's still going to close out the pay-per-view.
Sure.
And that just, that reaffirms that one title's bigger than the other.
Right.
It just does. There's no way around that.
Right. No, absolutely. And I honestly, I feel like the only titles that should be, like, show exclusive are the mid-card titles.
Right.
Just the Intercontinental and just the United States. Even tag team and the women's, you know, championships. I feel like should be able to be on both shows. Now, whether it's on both shows every week, you know, they can kind of make that decision as they go.
Well, I would prefer, I mean, this is happening in July, which mm-hmm. means SummerSlam's kind of the next big thing.
Right.
So I would prefer a SmackDown wrestler winning the title
mm-hmm.
at SummerSlam, and then the title is a SmackDown storyline for the next 2 months.
Right.
And Raw can be a, you know, authority return storyline or whatever you want it to be.
Right. Whatever their main non-title storyline is.
Right, exactly. I don't want to take away big storyline from Raw, but that's a big way to, right off the bat, show, like, SmackDown is important.
Right.
That things happen on SmackDown. If you want to keep up with what's happening in this company, watching SmackDown is a part of that again.
Right. The only real issue with that is it'll be a little bit harder for the writers to coordinate. Since they're two, like, distinctive writing teams, it'll be kind of harder for them to coordinate of, like, you know, well, this is what we have the champion doing on this episode, and how we're going to write him and how we're going to build him to eventually lose to a Raw guy or something. Like, you know, it's going to be weird to, like, okay, this storyline is going to weave back and forth with Raw and SmackDown because it's the championship. They could be on both.
Right. And that's the ultimate stumbling block because...
Right. And that's probably why I feel like we're going to get another main, quote-unquote, main championship.
Right.
Top tier, I should say.
Well, and that's the thing is, like, if you have that and one of the storylines weaves into both shows,
mm-hmm.
which writing staff is responsible for that storyline. Mm-hmm. And it kind of feels like, you know, judging on past history, it will ultimately be the Raw, the Raw writing staff.
Unless they go just all out and just be like, you know, kind of like a TV championship kind of stipulation where it's just the SmackDown championship.
Yeah.
Where it can only be defended on SmackDown or something. And then maybe pay-per-views or I don't know.
I mean, maybe. There's.
But they would have to, like, you know.
There's a lot of stuff.
Crap out of it.
That they can do.
Out the gate.
This also, you know, opens up with the network specials.
Yeah.
Those can be brand exclusive, which is a way to get the brand exclusive pay-per-view kind of feel on an event without.
Without necessarily breaking
making
up,
like, one of
your pay-per-views, like, this is going to be SmackDown, this, you know, Extreme Rules is going to be Raw, Payback is going to be SmackDown, or blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I'm assuming Raw continues to be 3 hours, and SmackDown continues to be 2 hours.
Right.
Which
is going to be another hurdle that they're going to have to figure out as far as dividing up the roster.
Right.
You know, if they're going...
Does that mean SmackDown gets a smaller roster?
Right. And then Raw keeps a bigger roster because they've got to put on a 3-hour show.
Right.
It would be easier if they went down to 2 hours on Raw, and it would probably be, you know, better as far as content.
It would absolutely be better, no question. However, we are getting something I didn't think we were getting for a very long time.
Oh, sure. So, right. But if Raw is working with a smaller roster, those 3 hours are going to really... You're going to really feel those 3 hours. And again, that's why it would help if, you know, the tag team championships, the WWE World Heavyweight and the Women's Championship were
kind of fluid for both shows.
Right. That helps a little bit.
Well, but the issue that you get with that is... So, Tag Team Championship, Women's Championship, Main Champion.
Mm-hmm.
That's four wrestlers that are fluid to both shows.
Right.
And their challengers have to be fluid to both shows. Because, you know... And so you're quickly at eight, and then, you know, if they get a manager or a friend or somebody in their corner, then you're up to 10 people who are fluid to both shows, which is your entire main event scene, which part of the problem is, you know, as far as the super show thing was that all the main event stuff all happened on Raw anyway. So SmackDown was only mid card stuff.
Right.
And so how soon before we're doing that again?
Right. I mean, there's another additional thing that they could do, and just as an idea to kind of work through all that stuff, is whenever a championship changes hands and the championship goes to a superstar of a different show, there has to be some sort of stipulation where within a certain amount of time they have to either defend it on the other show or defend it against someone from another show, like on a pay-per-view or something.
Right.
That way, the championship can be involved in another storyline on that the show of that superstar, whereas on the other star, your main storyline is now how do we determine who deserves that chance.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So then your main storyline on the other show that doesn't have a championship is a chase after a championship that's not even on their show.
Right.
Which adds, you know, a little bit of intrigue, I feel.
Well, and that's the, you know, biggest complaint that I've always had is make those matches on the weekly shows mean something.
Right.
Which is why, part of the reason I like this time of the year so much is because they can do those Money in the Bank qualifier matches where it's like, okay, this, you know.
Even though they kind of, you know, shot their wad a little bit and did all that one.
Yep, there we go. All done, taken care of.
And another one was taken up on SmackDown this week.
Yeah.
Del Rio beat Zack Ryder, so there's one slot left, and John Cena's coming back next Monday, so.
Mm. Mm. But that, I mean, at least it's one, you know, 1 week where pretty much every match counts.
Sure.
And they had a lot of matches, like Kevin Owens versus AJ Styles. Mm-hmm. I could see both of those guys definitely being in the Money in the Bank.
Sure.
That match could go either way. There are genuine ramifications of the fallout of this match. I'm interested in seeing this match.
Mm-hmm.
And that just, that doesn't happen with any great regularity.
Yeah.
The other thing to address here is how NXT and NXT status plays into all this. With the whole takeover the end.
Right.
Does that mean that, I mean,
are they referring to, like, this is the definite end of the Finn Balor Samoa Joe feud? Because I can see how that's what their intentions are.
And it's just coincidentally lined up with this.
Right. But again, they didn't announce that until like the day after they announced the brand split. And so, and you know, theories are already running rampant all over the place.
Well, we know that part of what will likely happen is, you know, they suddenly have two rosters to fill out.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of guys who are pretty much ready.
Oh, sure.
We have Nakamura, we have Samoa Joe.
Yeah, there's a huge bottleneck at the top of NXT,
mm-hmm,
as far as like guys who are ready to move on.
We've talked about it before, like, if there was ever a time to do an NXT invasion, this really feels like the time. Right. And not saying that's what will happen, but a bunch of guys could debut pretty much right now.
And be legitimate threats to established main roster.
Right.
Wrestlers.
So is this the time you want to clear house and, you know, whoever's next is NXT Generation 2?
Sure. I mean, this could be the way, because I'm assuming that's why these guys were kept down in NXT for so long.
But,
you know, guys like Samoa Joe were just like, okay, well, I appreciate everything he's doing with Finn Balor right now, but I'm starting to wonder why he's still in NXT.
Yeah.
Same with Finn Balor. Nakamura not so much because he's, you know, just got here.
Right.
But, you know, it kind of answers all the questions of what exactly do you think they were thinking as far as, like, the big talent grab that they've been doing these past few months. I feel like this plays a big role in that. And this whole Cruiserweight series also has an additional level of intrigue because that's a lot of guys that you could potentially bring on through NXT.
Right.
And it also, if this will free things up to feature, you know, rising up-and-comers through NXT, like Ty Dillinger, Tommaso Ciampa, and Johnny Gargano, like these guys who are good enough to be in the spotlight, but they're on the same stage with all these other massive superstars.
I think what we're saying is Ryback picked the wrong time to throw a hissy fit.
That was the point. Ryback picked the wrong time to hand in his notice. Wade Barrett, mm-hmm, took the wrong time. I don't even know if Ryback gave his notice, but that's essentially what he's done. Cody Rhodes, for sure, picked the wrong time.
Yeah.
And again, like, a lot of it has been, like, their soul has kind of been crushed by all this, and they're just ready to move on to something else. And by all means, I wish them the absolute best.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's like, if you guys just waited on a few more months,
yeah,
you would have had a better chance.
Well, the poor Cody, like, Cody, you know, Cody has asked for his release since we recorded last.
Yes.
And that would, any other week, that would have been the big story we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like, we dedicated like 30 minutes to talking about Ryback.
Well, also Ryback took it to Tumblr.
Yeah, Ryback did it weird. But like, Cody had a list, and like, would have, that's the thing. Any other week, we would have like,
but it wasn't
gone
like,
through there, reacted to that.
But for the most part, that message wasn't exactly sour grapes. Like, he had a couple shots at like writers, but everyone else, he seemed genuinely appreciative and but you know, still had a fondness for a lot of people.
But Cody making this statement that he was done, that freaking, you know, Dusty Rhodes' son was done with this company,
mm-hmm.
which is a big deal, it should be a big deal, has been buried by this brand split announcement.
Right.
And that just, like, and that just sucks additionally for him, because that this is when it suddenly feels like we are taking,
right,
you know, the 2-hour show that we always kind of shuffle you off to, mm-hmm. that's going to start counting again.
Right. Although I still feel like even if he had stayed, I felt like he would still probably get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah.
Especially with the potential influx of NXT talent that are still yet to come this year.
So how do you keep it from being Raw's the top, SmackDown's right underneath, and then NXT is still developmental, and that's the order you have to go through to make it to the top?
Well, I mean, NXT can kind of, I feel like, as long as the way that they've done NXT doesn't necessarily change, but like the philosophy stays the same, I feel like you're going to be just fine. It will be a challenge for them to build new top stars in NXT, but you know that's always been their challenge though,
and they've risen to it without issue.
Right. Except now, like these past few months, it's just been like we're so top heavy in NXT mm-hmm. that they really haven't had to address that in a while. You know, not since Finn Balor, you know, Balor and Kevin Owens took over at the top.
What was the 4-way match? Sami Zayn, Neville,
Tyson Kidd,
Tyler Breeze,
yeah.
Like that was part of the time where I was like, this is a lot of talent crammed into one match.
Right. And we thought that was at the time was a lot of talent mm-hmm. crammed into one match. So NXT kind of has to go back to that, and they have to do that, you know, with a new writer.
Right.
Because I'm assuming they're not going to make, I can't remember his name, but I'm assuming they're not going to make him do double duty.
Yeah.
Nor should he, because he's going to need to concentrate on SmackDown. And honestly, I'd be okay if the writing staff was just him.
Well, that's the thing is, SmackDown has a giant hurdle to go. SmackDown's got a lot to prove.
Right.
And I hope they know that.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, we have all written SmackDown off as the Raw replay show or the watch it if there's nothing about it. Like, there's been no reason to really watch SmackDown.
Sure.
There's been very little reason to go to SmackDown. SmackDown's been through here a couple of times, and you should be like,
Right.
Like, if I'm totally free that night,
right,
but
if I've got a vacation day that I'm willing to spend, or if I'm not, I'm not going to bother.
But yeah, that's the thing. Is like, it's...
Now, I will say...
It's a Tuesday.
Right.
I got work in the morning.
They're going to have to show an incredible amount of patience and self-restraint on if this is the way they're going to go, they're going to need to hold to the brand split as much as they can as far as, like, non-title holders.
Right.
Because I feel like that's going to be the main factor. Like, because the selling point for all this is, like, if you like so-and-so, you better tune in on SmackDown because that's really the only time you're going to see them unless you buy the network and watch the pay-per-views.
Right.
They're going to have to really be patient hold of that and don't do super shows every
3 weeks.
Right. Every few months. Sure. Why not? Just to kind of spice things up on a Raw or SmackDown.
Well, I remember, it was before WrestleMania 26.
Mm-hmm.
So the brand split was still going pretty strong. It was when Batista came and attacked John Cena.
Yes.
And it was like, I don't know, because I remember the feeling of Batista is a SmackDown wrestler. What is he doing here?
Right.
This is incorrect and wrong.
Right.
It will be a while before you can get that shocking feel.
Right. And that points to another thing that this does and why this is a positive thing, the brand split. It doesn't wear you out on two guys fighting all the time.
Right.
And then for a major pay-per-view, they're up against each other again, and you're supposed to feel like it's a big deal, but you just watched it for like the past 3-4 Raw and SmackDowns because they like repeating matches in the same week. But this way, and again, that's why I said it's important that they show restraint in holding to the brand split, is when you get reach WrestleMania season or whatever, and all of a sudden you have a Raw and SmackDown guy or a SmackDown guy that's recently got traded or something like that, it feels like a big deal, and it feels like I'm interested to see what that match is going to be like.
Right.
You know? Kind of like Randy Orton, he went on Twitter for like the first time forever yesterday. And, you know, so people were asking him questions. Like, you know, he expressed how much he, you know, he will miss Cody Rhodes, stuff like that. But then, like, you know, if someone asked him, well, what do you think about AJ Styles? He's like, I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember exactly what he said. But he's like, a lot of talent. I respect him a lot. Can't wait to catch him out of the air. You know, RKO him out of the air or something like that. And all of a sudden, I'm like, I think I really want to see a Randy Orton, AJ Styles match. Because I hadn't seen it before.
You've never seen that before.
And you've got AJ, who's an incredible in-ring talent, and you've got Randy Orton, who makes everything just look smooth.
Yeah, well, that's the biggest issue with Randy Orton is he started so young. Randy Orton feels like there's a lot left in him.
Right.
It feels like Randy Orton's career-defining match could still happen.
Sure.
Just he's done it all, and there's nothing left to do. So when something like AJ comes along, and you're
something like I want to see what he can do against Randy Orton.
Yeah.
It's pretty much how I feel like with Nakamura and everybody else on the roster. It's like,
yeah,
the world is open again.
Nakamura versus Blank. Like, I've been waiting for that.
Like, the only real match that I've seen him do before with somebody on WWE is AJ. I'm okay with seeing that again.
Yeah.
You know? It opens up a lot of excitement as far as potential bigger matches down the line if they hold to it.
Right.
And I feel like I said, that's going to be the biggest indicator on whether or not they're taking this seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Is how willing they are to holding to it.
How long they can maintain that.
Right. And if they, you know, in the draft, they stack everybody on one and not the other. If they still stack everybody on Raw, it's going to be hard to, you know, even though it's going to, we're all going to groan and we're going to complain when, because I know it's going to happen, when Roman Reigns stays on Raw and John Cena gets moved to SmackDown.
Right.
And you're like, okay, well, the entire SmackDown show is going to be Cena's at the top, let's feed everybody underneath him to Cena and let him beat him every week.
Mm-hmm.
You know? We're all going to groan at that, and hopefully the writers don't do that because they want to put on a good show and not just cater to
right. And a little bit of the worry is, like, Cena's going to be the mini-boss at top of SmackDown that you have to make it through to earn your ticket to Raw.
Right.
And so, yeah, there's... But you know what? There's, like, a lot of ways this can go wrong, but it's exciting that this is happening.
Right.
I am looking forward to SmackDown for the first time since, you know, in years.
And maybe this is the way to go about it. Like, a few years of a break from a brand split, and they built up the roster to probably one of the best that they've ever had.
Right.
And now people are not nearly as burnt out on it as we were a few years ago.
Right. Well, I have every intention of, for at least the first several weeks, watching both shows.
Right.
You know, I am – and that's going to be – a lot of wrestling, especially like pay-per-view weeks. Mm-hmm. That's going to be Sunday 3 hours, Monday 3 hours, Tuesday 2 hours, Wednesday an additional hour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 3, 6, that's 9 hours of wrestling.
Just the WWE.
All front-loaded in the week, and that's just WWE.
They're hoping by the time you get to Wednesday, you're like, okay, I just have enough energy to watch 1 hour of NXT. I don't feel like watching 1 hour of Lucha Underground.
I can't take Lucha.
Or Ring of Honor or TNA, you know? Yeah, that's kind of what they're hoping for. And we'll see how that plays out for them.
And I mean, that's the thing. It's like, yeah, it's very, you know, it's very heavy loaded. It's back to back to back. But this is exciting and interesting. And
but as far as, like, you know, them showing us that they're taking it seriously or they actually show us how they're putting effort into SmackDown, is they're going to have some version of, or something along the lines of, when Heyman did the SmackDown 6.
Exactly.
You know, when he's got a rotation of guys that you've got a mix of top guys in the company where with a bunch of guys who are on the cusp of it.
Yeah.
You know.
We'll see what happens. Very exciting.
Incredibly exciting.
Very exciting time. We haven't even mentioned Extreme Rules.
Yeah, who cares? Okay. We do the whole thing with Trash Ring Attire and the open.
Right.
We predict everything. And that's the majority. That's really the main reason, other than, like, bragging rights. Not the pay-per-view.
Which can come back now.
Which can now come back. Holy crap. The weird, like, half-red, half-blue ring ropes.
Yeah.
That totally derailed me. but we do that with Trash Ring Attire. And usually, like, everyone's kind of like all over the board. You know, some people like to take risks, some, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lot of people do really well this week.
Yes.
And I know my abilities, because this is the second, I think I'm tied for second right now.
Overall. Right.
And I'm not saying that to brag, because I'm horrible at these things. If I am able, I hardly ever pick with my heart on these. I try so hard to be like, this is where I think WWE is going to go. And rarely am I ever this right 2 months in a row.
Right.
And yes, the pay-per-views were overall not bad.
There have been...
Extreme Rules is okay. Payback, I felt like, was probably a stronger show.
There have been no surprises.
Right.
In the two since WrestleMania.
Right. And that's not always a bad thing. You don't want to overly surprise everyone in every single pay-per-view.
Right.
Because then it becomes just a one-upping contest from pay-per-view to pay-per-view. But a lot of people did really well in those predictions. And I'm not saying that because we're all really good at making predictions, because I know for a fact that I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that I'm doing so well in this is an indicator for WWE to maybe it's time to change things up a little bit.
But I do want to commend the Fatal 4-Way for the Intercontinental Championship.
Yeah.
Which is easily match of the night.
Sure.
I would say is a match of the year contender. It won't win because the Nakamura match at NXT.
Well, yeah.
Like kind of sucks that came out. It's, you know,
mm-hmm.
that you happen to do that match.
Right.
You know, the year that other match happened, so.
Yeah, I,
Not to spoil the classies, you know,
sure.
6 months from now, but.
So far, it doesn't look like anything's going to beat that.
Yeah.
Unless Sami Zayn and Nakamura have a main roster match between now and December. Which is a very real possibility.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel like they kind of, a lot of time was spent on the main event just kicking out of finishers
mm-hmm.
of everyone. Like, you spent, like, such a long time for AJ, like, tempting to go to the Styles Clash, but never actually doing it, something would happen, and it would end matches on the forearm or whatever,
I think, or the
submission move that he's got.
I think they had a stronger match at Payback.
Sure.
And that's, you know, that's part of the risk you run when you're doing the same main event back-to-back.
But it's also
when it's better the first time, then it makes the whole pay-per-view feel
right.
better the first time around.
And it's usually not a great idea to follow two main event championship matches back to back, and it'd be an overly convoluted, run-in heavy match.
Yeah.
Both times. Usually at least once you'd be like some sort of definitive end, because you could argue a billion different ways on how Roman Reigns had a, you know, didn't necessarily win clean because of all the, you know, run-ins or whatever, mm-hmm. even though it was a pretty clean sphere.
Yeah.
But still, like, Roman Reigns kicking out of two Styles Clashes, one being on a chair, I felt like they kind of went to that well a little bit too much in this match of, like, everyone kicking out of finishers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that.
And it goes both ways. Like, you know, AJ kicking out of one. Like, they went to that well a lot in this match.
Mm-hmm.
And we often make fun of that, like, you know, save that for WrestleMania to kick it out of finishers. It feels like a lack of creativity by whoever put the match together.
Yeah.
Whether that be, I mean, and that could be AJ, it could be Roman, it could be more than likely the producers of that, or the agents on that particular match.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a main event match without having to kick out of a bunch of finishers.
All you need to do is again, we just talked about, you have 5 hours of content, soon to be 5 hours of live content,
right,
every week, and finish matches without finishers, you know?
Sure.
They're just, and you need to have matches that finish on just really good punches or really good kicks.
Mm-hmm.
Or a really solid frog splashing. Like, you just can't get up from that sometimes.
Like what they did with AJ for a while. He would finish matches with a submission or the forearm. Didn't even, like, he would go for the clash but never actually hit it, but he wouldn't, sometimes he wouldn't need to.
Right. The fact that you've gotten to the point where matches can only be finished with a finisher,
yeah,
means that you have to kick out of finishers for a surprise kick out. You can't surprise kick out of a really good, you know, strike of any kind. And you need to get back to the point where just sometimes you beat a guy down and you pin him,
mm-hmm,
because he couldn't get up in time.
Right.
And that's fine. That doesn't make anybody look weak by getting pinned with something less than a finisher.
Sure.
If they've had a back and forth and they've gotten beaten down, mm-hmm, through a good solid match, that's fine.
Right.
You know, we all know that cocking that arm for that Superman punch doesn't make it stronger.
No.
So it's fine. Just let it happen.
Yeah.
And then you don't have issues like this.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, kudos to Jericho for taking a tack, like the first tack spot in forever.
I mean, that was,
and probably one of the worst ones that they've ever had. Like, he got a lot of them, especially on like the inside of his arm, like that.
Mm-hmm. You know what? They lived up to that, you know, this is going to be a big deal match. And we're all, sure, like, it was just a cage match. Shut up. It's right. A cage match with the Black Cage. And they're like, no, that was
intense. You guys are just going to like tease the weapons, but never actually use them or whatever. Mm-hmm. Kind of like, well, I think was the match the Dudley Boys were in, where they introduced, like, you know, they're going to light of
the table
on fire, and they never actually did it, and the match ended, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's the idea of don't introduce something if you're not going to use it.
Well, and that's the thing, you know.
And I honestly felt like they were probably going to do that with the tax. Like, he's going to bring out the tax, introduce it, but it's just going to sit there in the corner of the ring and never actually get used. But,
you know, like,
they proved me wrong.
15, 17 years ago, tax were almost like, were expected almost.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And so,
just like any CZW indie match, just, you're expected to bust a lot of fluorescent light tubes.
And like, not to belittle Chris Jericho, but like, he didn't really take a big thing. But like, he only had to take one tack bump, you know, but because it was the first one in
forever,
that was like, holy crap.
Mm-hmm. Especially when, you know, we're only a few months removed from Dean Ambrose in this match against Brock Lesnar, and introducing a lot of weapons that would have hurt a lot. But Brock Lesnar always hit him before he was able to use them. And again, like the Barbie or whatever, never got used. You know?
So kudos to that. And that's the thing, when you pick your moments to use that special spot, that really elevated that match. Mm-hmm. And so good for them.
I agree.
Anything else mentioning this week?
Nothing. I'm scouring through my mind of like all just a so massive amount of news.
Yeah. All right. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at CRAttire. We live tweet all Mondays and appropriate Sundays.
And if you have any questions, comments, all your thoughts about the brands, the potential brand split, and all just everything that's going to be coming out of that, send that over to our email. That's classicringattire@gmail.com.
We're also on iTunes. Easy way to follow the podcast. You subscribe. You get a new episode every week. You give us a rating of
5 stars.
Or you write a review. That kind of interaction helps out the podcast as far as iTunes metrics goes.
And if you are listening to us on InsidePulse.com, leave us a comment on there. We'd love to hear from you.
We're also on Facebook. Easy way to follow Chris. Easy way to follow myself. Follow the podcast. See what other kind of things we're working on.
Yep.
Until next time, stay classy and huzzah.
Huzzah.